There's three sides to every story. There's my side, your side, and the truth.
Which Kelly are you?
Edward. People call me Ned.
I photograph what my conscience asks me to.
Ned, they want to have him in the movie!
Mad Max 2. It's my kind of movie.
Shut up! Shut up!
Your friend can't come backstage.
Oh, he's disabled. I'm his carer.
You're blind.
He's an equal opportunity employer.
The kids who are sick cannot do the hip-hop anymore.
My name's Andrew Pierce, and this is a podcast that takes a look at Australian films, culture, and a little bit of everything in between. This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Whadjuk people of Perth region, and I pay respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. On this particular episode, I am catching up with Josephine Croft, who has made a short film called Grounded, about a woman who wakes up in an airplane, and there is nobody else in there. And there is a slight possibility there might be somebody else in there with her that shouldn't be there. It's a little bit of a horror, a little bit of a thriller, and it's really, really good. It's currently on the search for the festival run at the moment, so being submitted into festivals, so keep an eye out for it. But if you're interested in finding out about this particular film, listen ahead with this interview with Josephine, and yeah, it's really great. Learned a lot about short filmmaking here and learned a lot about, well, Josephine as an actor, as a writer, and what her vision is as a creative person in Australia going forward. Stick around for that interview right now. Well, let's start talking about your short film, Grounded. Yeah. Because I think as you're talking about being in lockdown, and it makes me feel like watching this short, I'm like, imagine for some people if they wake up in a situation like the character does, where you're trapped on a plane and everybody's gone, and it's kind of like what waking up in lockdown must feel like, I imagine. You know, this anxiety of being like, I don't want to be in here, how do I get out of here? Written before all that kind of stuff, but it was this, you know, that anxiety of being trapped, a major propulsion for this kind of this story?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to say it was, but it was kind of just a coincidence in a way. Do you know what I mean? Because I wrote it in sort of mid 2019, and it was so funny because it was like when it came to we wanted to film in April 2020, and then obviously we went into lockdown and in March, and then I just felt so frustrated because the whole time we were in lockdown, there were all of these airplanes sitting around doing nothing, all grounded, and we couldn't get on and film one. And it was just like, this is the perfect time to film a short film on an airplane, and we can't get anywhere. And then and it was sort of, yeah, and when we eventually got on the airplane, it does. There's so many parallels with lockdown and feeling trapped and you know, a metaphorical trapped as well as like a physical trapped because you're actually trapped in your own home. And then since then, we've also been trying to develop the feature film as well. And anything horror wise, I think just really kind of runs parallel with COVID and lockdown, because so many people are fearful and so many people, there's so much anxiety about, you know, whatever it is, whether it's like getting COVID or not getting COVID or the conspiracy theories about, you know, the government's putting 5G in us, or do you know what I mean? Like there's just so much fear and anxiety about everything. And like this, that's what this plays off, is the anxiety I decided that long before we filmed that she was a highly anxious person anyway, and then putting her in that situation. So it wasn't necessarily inspired, but it kind of was like, was one of those happy coincidences, if you know what I mean.
So where did the idea come from as well? I understand it came from a true story in a way.
So my husband is obsessed with anything dark and weird, and he made us he's like, you've made a horror film, we need to watch more horror. So we watched The Conjuring on the weekend. But he sent me this article about a woman who'd been trapped on a plane in America, she'd fallen asleep on the plane, and they obviously hadn't, I don't really know how it happened, but they obviously hadn't checked the plane properly when they got off. And then, yeah, she woke up by herself, but she managed to call someone and call security or whatever, and they came and got her. But I think she was still on there for a little while. And I was like, oh, I just, that feeling of being alone on a plane kind of really played with me, because no, it's never happened to me before. Like, I guess unless you're a pilot or unless you're a air steward, then you wouldn't know that feeling of being alone on an airplane. I was kind of like, you know, it's a confined space. It would work really well for a short film. And I kind of like, you know, thought about the idea for a while. And then I was like, I feel like it needed to have a little bit more of an element to it. And so that was when it was like, what if there was something stuck on board with her? And then my husband's really good, even though my husband's a scientist, but he's super creative. And so I sit down with him and I'm like, right, we're gonna nut this idea out, and we kind of brainstorm with each other until we get to something good. And yeah, that's how we came up with that.
Yeah, it's really effective, and certainly plays on the claustrophobia of it quite well. There's something, I mean, it's been a long time since I've been on a plane, and for a lot of people, mm-hmm. it's been a long time. So this claustrophobic feeling of something that's familiar but has now grown to be a little bit foreign as well, really works quite well. It's
amazing.
Yeah. So what was the choice of, you know, you're in it as well. What was the choice of you taking the role of the character? Was that always the decision? Did you write this for yourself?
Yeah. So I've been an actor for years and years and years. I started acting when I was about 15 years old. And sort of had quite a lot of sex. Didn't have quite a lot of sex. That's not the right thing. Had quite a lot of success. But when I was like a teenager, from about 15 to 21, I had like a few decent roles on TV. And then I sort of went through this period of just not really auditioning and not really getting a lot of work. Don't really know what it was. I don't know if there was just more availability. Well, maybe less availability of teenagers who could act. So I sort of was in a lesser pool, and then suddenly I turned 22 and there was a huge pool of people who were like me kind of thing, and drama school graduates and that kind of stuff. Yeah, and then, you know, I've had periods of thinking, yes, this isn't working for me. Why am I still in this industry kind of thing? And thought about leaving, and every time I tried to leave the industry and go and get a real job, I just would end up in the fetal position crying, I don't want it. And so I kind of got to this point where I was like, okay, well, I have to find a way to make it work. Cause I'm not going to leave it. I'm too stubborn to be like, okay, well, that didn't work out, so I'll just try something else. So I was like, I just need to find a way to make it work. So I decided to start making my own projects. And then the first idea I had was a documentary that I made about my acrobatic cheerleading team going to the Worlds in America. And then the second thing I produced was a short film. And then I didn't expect to enjoy producing so much, really, really enjoyed producing. And I think a big part of that is because as an actor, you sit around waiting for someone else to give you a job. Mm. And it's a really disempowering place to be. And, you know, when you go to industry events, I always felt like, if I met a director, there'd be that feeling of like, this person could give me a job, be cool, be cool, be cool. And there was, and then the minute you have that kind of anxiety, it just turns you into a different person, and you say stupid things, and I think people can pick up on the vibe that you're like, I know I'm an actor out of work. Yeah. And then, so I'd done those two projects, but I hadn't, like, I did a small role in the second short film. But I was like, I hadn't really done anything that sort of showcased me as an actor. And I was like, it would be cool to kind of do that. Mm. And then when I wrote Grounded, I didn't necessarily write it with me in mind, but I definitely thought it would be a cool story. And then I was like, I could absolutely cast myself in this. Like, why wouldn't I kind of thing? Because, you know, as much as I love producing, I'm still an actor at heart. It still makes me tick. You know?
Yeah. Well, there's a really multifaceted aspect of what you're doing. I mean, it's very, you know, building it and for yourself and working alongside a great crew of people. But, you know, as you're saying, you're doing documentary, producing, writing, acting. Is that kind of the reality nowadays for a lot of actors and producers here in Australia? Because from my experience at least, sorry, talking to indie people, you know, there is a feeling that, all right, if Screen Australia is not going to fund it, then I can just do it myself, because there is a huge crew of great people who are available to make excellent short films or feature films. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I do think, there's so, because of the Australian industry, the way that it is, there's not a lot of budget, and that filters down so that, you know, the lead roles are always going to go to people who are known, and then the roles beneath that, you know, casting directors only have a small budget and a small amount of time to see people. And, you know, I mean, I hear that in America, there'll be like a 2-line role and they'll audition 2,000 people for it.
Yeah.
In Australia, you probably audition 10 at the most, kind of thing. So it's like, it's just a totally different ball game. And when you're playing with those odds, it's just so much harder to get in front of casting directors or directors. So I think definitely when you're emerging or you're trying to break through, I do think that one of the best ways is to make your own work. I don't have many regrets in life. I'm one of those people that is like, I'd rather regret something I did do rather than I didn't do. But I just wish that I had started making my own work when I was 20 instead of waiting until now. I wasted too many years being like, I don't know what to do. And one of the interesting things was like, there was a little while, because I feel like it's probably like an actor insecurity, but I feel like so many times when I'd walk into a networking night or an industry night, which was directors and producers, I'd always be a little bit embarrassed about the fact that I was an actor. Do you know what I mean? Because it was like, it sort of felt like I was like, what I was going, oh, you know, I failed as an actor, so I had to produce my own work. And then I went to Rachel Griffiths did a talk at Screen Australia, and she was talking about how actors actually make really amazing directors and producers, and how they're like natural born storytellers and how they're really personable. And then after that speech, and then after speaking to a few other people, I started saying, like, thinking, turning around and saying, this is actually an asset of mine rather than something to be embarrassed about.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly one of the things which I've been really impressed by with Rachel in particular, with Jennifer Kent. You know, these are actors who start off with as acting and then transitioned over to writing or producing or directing. And, you know, Australia's got a whole bunch of great people who have made short films and feature films. So I recently just watched Nash Edgerton's short film, you know, and it's like, I know that he's an actor and all this kind of stuff, but it's great to see these varied stories come out. And alongside Grounded as well. And it's like you're pulling from something that, A, interests you, but also gives you something to work with that you're interested in working with too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that was one of the big thing for me is I didn't, having Grounded and starting from the moment that I came up with the idea and going through the whole process of writing it, of talking to the director about it, of acting in it and producing in it, and then, like, you know, post-producing and that kind of stuff, it's a very different feeling creating something of your own and seeing it through to the finish. Mm. And, you know, a lot of the time as an actor, you come in and there's been so much work that's done before you that you're completely unaware of. And, like, even during the day, you know, the crew get there before you do. Most people get there before you do. You rock up and then you probably leave. Most of the time you leave before everyone else does as well. So you're not actually there through the whole process. When we wrapped filming, I was high for about 48 hours just from the experience of it. It was such a cool experience.
Yeah.
And I kept going out. I was like going over there. I was like, I'll remember when this happened to try and like keep the memory alive.
Yeah. I want to talk about choosing the horror genre to work with, because there is a inbuilt audience, not just in Australia, but globally with that. Was that a conscious decision to choose the horror genre for this short film?
I think it came more from the story. The story lended itself to horror. And then I did know that, you know, horror is a great place to start, as far as, especially with like you know, horror does so well in low budget stuff. And it's so sought after that there is such a great audience that really love horror and support it so much. So yeah, I didn't set out to make a horror film because of that, but I definitely, when I came up with the idea, I knew it would be great to work within the horror genre because of all of that.
Mm. Yeah, it has been really wonderful seeing, you know, Australia's got a lot of really great micro budget Australia horror features and horror shorts that are out there, and seeing the reception in America and particularly for these films has been fantastic, especially, you know, I try and keep track of what the reception is for a lot of Australian films because that's what I love. That's my passion. And getting to see Americans being like, did you see this? Or something like Lake Mungo, which has grown to be such a massive international success over time. And that film costs virtually nothing. And there is just this huge audience for Australian horror. And it's really wonderful to see. So I'm excited to see how Grounded is received too.
I'm studying this year with Sue Maslin, who was the producer amazing producer, and David Court as well, who was used to be at AFTERS and now has started his own school. So part of that, I've been looking up horror production companies, and I looked up Blumhouse. I did a bit of research about Blumhouse, and the stuff that they're doing in horror is quite incredible. The model that they've got that keeps it so low budget and then is able to make so much money at the box office. Mm. And I think, Sue Maslin's actually doing a feature film summit soon to talk about how to make Australian film industry more successful and how to actually make money from Australian film, because we just haven't quite got there yet. So the idea of keeping something low budget but then still making, you know, a decent amount of money at the box office, because there's like some crazy statistic of like the amount of people, first time Australian directors who've never gone on to make another feature film because it was like it was too hard, which is quite depressing.
It really is. And it's something which I've been investigating and writing about for a long time, and just being like, you know, anticipating a lot of great Australian filmmakers who have a brilliant first film. Like if we're talking horror, for example, Sean Byrne, you know, with The Loved Ones took, you know, years for his follow-up to even come out. And then it took 2 years for that even to get a release in Australia. And it's like, but he made a brilliant film to start off with, so why did it take so long? And there's so many different reasons why, but it's really frustrating, especially when you see, you know, in America, I guess, and they're very complex and different worlds. They're different places of making, obviously, you know. But it's easy for an indie filmmaker to make a great received film, both box office or critically acclaimed, and then just roll on to the next one in America. Whereas here, it's like, great, you made a fantastic film. See ya.
Now what? Cool.
But it's great to hear somebody like Sue talking about how to make them profitable, because we kind of need that.
Absolutely.
You know,
we absolutely do.
We do so many great films here, and we've got so much untapped talent that I'm really excited to see where people go from, but we need the industry to foster and nurture it too. Yeah,
and I think there's this, like, one of the things that Sue talks about is that there's this stigma that people don't like Australian cinema, and it's not true. Like, people actually love Australian cinema. I hope my husband's going to get that. And one of the things that proved it was that, you know, while there was a loss of USA films at the box office, a whole bunch of Australian films did really well, like The Dry did exceedingly well. And so it's like, okay, so Australian cinema can do really well when they're not competing with the American box office. And that's not necessarily to say that the American films are better, but it's just that Australian films don't have the ability to market themselves in the same way. So they always get overshadowed by those American films. And so if we can come to a place of like, I mean, the stuff that she's talking about is exhibitors having specific cinemas to play Australian-only films or have like a time of the week or and also like have a say. Like at the moment, exhibitors don't have any say on what gets commissioned. What if they had a say on what was commissioned and they would like say yes to much more? Because they know their audiences really well. They know their who comes to see what films and when they come to see them and how long they come to see them, all that kind of stuff. And there's no like communication at the moment between those people, and it's quite integral.
Mm. It was one of the things which I found really interesting when Clayton Jacobson did Brothers Nest, and that came out, and the marketing and the distribution of that was basically him going to cinemas and saying, here, have the film, you put it on as long as you want, and I take this amount of money from the first 2 weeks, and then after that, everything that, you know, gets made from the film comes back to the cinema itself. And so it puts the onus on the cinema too to be like, all right, you're going to get a bit of a financial kick back from supporting Australian films. And there was an audience for that film. It was a great film. But that kind of risky marketing and risky distribution is maybe what we need going forward. I'm not sure. Yeah. It's hard.
Definitely. I think, something's got to change. It's, you know, that thing of like, stupid's the definition of doing the same thing and expecting a different result. We definitely have to change something. And it's like, you know, I don't think cinema is dead in any way, shape or form, but I do think that we have to change the way we do it. I mean, my local cinema is Como Cinema, and it's very much an independent cinema, but you're never going to see the latest Marvel film there. But it's a really busy cinema, and people go there. The cinema is quite small. They're like maybe 70 seats per cinema. I think a few of them are bigger than that. But you go there and you have a glass of wine and you have a night out, and it's fancy, and they've got like, you know, fancy chairs to sit on, and the cinema seats are really comfy and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that's very much the way that I want to enjoy cinema. I want to go and have a night out and feel like it's like special going and seeing something rather than just sitting at home and watching whatever movie you want to watch. So,
yeah. That's what I like about Luna, my local cinema that I go to pretty much every week. It's like they have cheese boards, you can get a bottle of wine and all this kind of stuff, and it's an event, you know, it makes it nice. And there is an audience for all of these different sorts of films, whether it's Australian or European films. There's a huge audience for them. So I think one of the things which I guess as a pie in the sky kind of idea, one of the things that I would love to see certainly is that you know, I cover short films as much as I can and talk to filmmakers like yourself about their short films. And then one of the enduring questions that I get from readers or listeners is, well, how do I see this short film? And I'm like, well, you can either go to a festival where it's screening or wait until it ends up on YouTube or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I really wish that small independent cinemas would embrace short films. And I know it would take a cut into their advertising budget, but you know, I think of like Pixar films, and they always have an animated short before them.
Yes,
and it's like, that's always one of the most exciting things.
Yeah, you're right.
Put an Australian short in front of there, you know,
we do
so many great things.
That's so true, actually. I've never really thought about that. Yeah, it's so true.
You know, a film like Grounded, which obviously you're going through the festival submission process right now. So that's a you know, whole process in itself and an exciting one. But I want to be able to point to people and go, yeah, check this out and things like that. Yeah. And it's, I'd like to be able to say as well, because this seems like I watch this at home on my screen. I'm fortunate enough to have a large screen at home because I watch a lot of films and stuff, but not everybody is. And I want to be able to say, go and watch this, you know, for example, The Dry is showing and Grounded's going to be playing before it. Make sure you watch that too.
Yeah.
These are dream things, but I just
it's clever though.
There is a lot of passion, as you're saying. There's a lot of passion for Australian film. There is a lot of love, and that the fallacy that people, Australians, don't like Australian film is wrong. So with that in mind, for you going forward, you've done this short, what's your next step process? Is it translating this into a feature film, as you were saying before?
So at the moment we're applying to get it made into a feature film. So using it as a proof of concept for a feature film. It actually wasn't originally why I made it. I just wanted to make a short. And then I kind of I had a dream one night of the short extending, or nightmare sort of the short extending. And I was like, because there was a while that I was, it all takes place on the plane. Like, how do you make that into the feature? And then I had, this nightmare. And I was like, oh my God, we can make it into a feature. And then I contacted, well, I just happened to, I was on the Australians in Film Zoom, and there was a few people and, you know, a whole bunch of writers. And I wrote in the chat box, like, is anyone a horror writer? And this, and a few people contacted, said, yeah, I am. But there was this one girl who was quite keen, and she was like, give me your email address, I'll email you. And I just think there's something about keenness that means that people work really hard, because my Dana, I put a call out for social media, and she was one of the first people to be like, this is my details, can we meet for coffee tomorrow? And then she was like, she was just so on the ball. And she's been the most amazing person to work with ever since. So I'm like, I feel like I'm onto something with this. Like, when people are that keen, I just feel like they put a bit more effort into what they're doing, and they're more passionate about what they're doing. And so they generally end up doing a really good job.
Yeah.
And so I contacted this writer, and I sort of showed it. We hadn't filmed at that point. Or maybe we had filmed, but we hadn't edited it. So I showed her the script, and sort of spoke to her about my ideas of what had happened in the dream. But then I was like, "But feel free to, you know, do whatever take the story wherever you want to take it." And so she has taken it off in a different direction. But yeah, it wouldn't have turned into a feature film had it not been for that dream. I can't remember what the original question is now.
That's good. Like, because when I'm watching it, I'm like, it ends in a moment where I'm like, I need to see where this continues going. So it's exciting to see that you've got something in the progress in process. And I'm excited to see what you do with it too, whether, you know, it's just writing, producing, acting, whatever. It's exciting to see this kind of work coming out. I want to talk about your work with director as well, because I think that, you know, overall the direction is really, really good. So how did you go about with the script and yourself there as a producer and a writer and the actor, how did you go about casting a director for this particular film?
So I actually sent it, I'd worked on this short called Karma Police, which was really quirky little, great short with a director called Greta. Her last name has escaped me at the moment. And I wanted to work with her again because I thought she was so good at stylizing that kind of stuff. But I knew this wasn't really within her genre of stuff. But anyway, I emailed her and I was like, let me know what you think. And she was like, listen, it's not really what I do, but I've got a friend who's really, really great with this kind of stuff. And so she sent it to him, which was Jesse. And then he emailed me, and I was like, he was like, I love the script. Let's meet for coffee. And then he had actually helped Greta out on the Karma Police film that we did. And so I like vaguely remembered him, but we had a chat and we sort of got along really well. And then he had like a suggestion for that. I can't remember what the original ending was, but the ending was slightly different, and he suggested the new ending. And I remember being like, ooh, quite like that. And then I think just there and then we were like, cool, let's work together. And I'd seen some of his stuff. He was a VCA grad, and he's now works at Cummings and Partners doing advertising. So, you know, he's constantly working, constantly sort of honing his craft, which, you know, I think like my advice these days for anyone trying to break into the world is like, go and do advertising, because it's just it's such hardcore work, and you just learn to be so streamlined with your process, and you constantly have to come up with ideas and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, and also you get to earn a wage, and then you've also built all of these crew around you that enjoy working with you, and then so when you go off to make your own film, they're like, yeah, sure, come on board, because like, you know, they feel like they've gone on the journey with you. I think it's a little bit different when you don't know someone and you're like, can you come on work on my project and I'm going to pay you a couple hundred bucks kind of thing. I think it's very different. So yeah, it kind of came out. It was basically Greta's recommendation. And then I really liked him, and we have a very similar sense of humour, and we often spend hours. I'm pretty sure, like, we know each other's full life history in the few years that we've known each other.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. Well, I think this is a really wonderful short, and you know, you and the whole team have created something really wonderful. As I was saying, you know, you're going through the whole festival submission process. How is that going for you guys as well? Is that a bit nerve-wracking at times?
Yeah. So one of the first festivals that we entered was Rain Dance, and I kind of got my heart bit stuck on Rain Dance, or set on Rain Dance. I really wanted to get into that. I just found out this week that we didn't get in. And then I was like, I had this moment of being like, you know, actors think about rejection all of the time. It's like that when everyone talks about acting, they're like, oh, the rejection. And then it's like, oh no, there's plenty of rejection in the industry outside of acting. I was like, oh no, I've discovered a new level of rejection when you've made a complete product and then people are like, yeah, no. Yeah, so we, like, you know, we've got into a few festivals and we've got a few nominations, which has been good, and an award for our composer. But yeah, we've had a few rejections so far. And yeah, it's you kind of like, you do go through that thing of like, oh, okay, maybe it's not as good as I thought it was. And then you have to be like, okay, you know, maybe it's fine, and maybe it just didn't work for that program, and maybe someone else is going to love it. And, you know, and I have had mixed reactions from it. You know, one person will be like, oh my God, you've absolutely blown this out of the water. And then someone else will be like, oh yeah, it's good, but it's not amazing, kind of thing. And it, like, you just have to remember that everyone's got an opinion and not everyone is going to love it. And that's like just part of filmmaking. We're still waiting on a whole bunch of festival nominations, but you do have to have a little bit of a thick skin with it.
Yeah, yeah. I hope the rest of it goes well, and you know, the submissions, obviously there are Australian festivals that are coming up as well, so fingers crossed for them too. With that kind of the building a thick skin kind of thing, do you have any suggestions for emerging artists who you know, getting into the industry as to how to deal with that? Because I think one of the things that we often forget about is the mental health side of things, where you know, we all say, go and write a script, go and make this film, go and do that, and then the rejection or the, you know, the silence that sometimes comes from the submission process or the working or casting or whatever, it can be a little bit difficult. So do you have any suggestions for people going through that kind of experience?
Yeah, I think one of the main things is just to remember that it's not personal. Like, I think when we have a rejection, we so often think, well, it's like, well, they obviously, you know, whether it's an actor or a filmmaker, a director, whether it's about a film or whatever, we always go, oh, I must be crap, or my project must be crap. And they've, like, you know, you always think the worst case scenario. They've obviously seen it and they're like, oh, this is terrible. Get that thing away from me. And then in actual reality, when it comes to the programmers, it might have, I mean, it could be to do with that your film isn't good enough, or that your audition isn't good enough, whatever it is. But there's so many other factors that go into it as well. And sometimes it's that they've picked a film that's very similar to yours, and so they can't program that with it, or they've picked a certain theme and it doesn't fit in, or whatever it is. Like, there's so many factors, and you just have to remember that, you know, it's not a personal attack on you, and that it's just part of the industry. And then I think is, like, you know, eventually someone will love it. And if they don't love it, then you just have to take it as though, okay, well, this was a learning experience. I got the first one out of the way. I can't expect the first one to be perfect, and I'll just keep on honing my craft and get better. But yeah, I do think there's a lot of power in realizing that it's not a personal attack on you and who you are and what you've made.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion there, and certainly a great way to kind of wrap up our discussion. We've had a really great discussion that's gone everywhere, which is exciting. I like those kinds of chats.
Yeah.
I tend to, I mean, when I sit down to do these interviews, I don't tend to know where they're going to go. And it's sure. always enjoyable to see what kind of things we discuss because
yeah.
I find filmmaking, I mean, I'm on the publicity side of things. I'm on the media side of things. So it's a little bit easier for me. But I find the process of it so fascinating and engaging. And mm-hmm. certainly if I can do what I can to help promote Australian films and Australian filmmakers, then I'm going to do that. And I'm happy to get behind this film because I think it's really good. So congratulations to you and the team.
Thank you so much. It's been so lovely to chat to you. You're a great interviewer.
That is Josephine Croft talking about her short film, Grounded, which, again, as you're listening there, is going through the festival submission process right now. If you want to find out more about what Josephine does, head over to her website, josephinecroft.com.au, and also find out more details about Grounded and the crew who helped make Grounded through tenaciousstories.net. Both of those links will be in the show notes. If you enjoyed this discussion, then head over to the website, thecurb.com.au, to listen to other interviews. There's a whole bunch of really great interviews going up over the next week. So head over there and keep your eyes on that and ears as well if you're listening to the podcast versions of some of the interviews. And follow us on social media, TheCurbAU, both on Twitter and on Facebook would be fantastic. If you want to go the extra step, keeping us independent, nice and independent, $1 a month, head over to the patreon.com/TheCurbAU. Helps a lot. You'd be surprised how much it helps. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. We will see you on the next one. Take care of each other.